These episodes feature contemporary artists presenting their latest exhibitions and projects. This podcast is brought to you by the Perrotin Gallery, based in Paris, New York, Hong Kong, Seoul, Tokyo, and Shanghai. Dans ces épisodes, des artistes contemporains présentent leurs derniers projets et expositions. Ce podcast est produit par la Galerie Perrotin, basée à Paris, New York, Hong Kong, Séoul, Tokyo et Shanghai.
Buenas noches. Good evening, everyone. I want to welcome you to Perrotin Gallery, Perrotin Gallery. Gabriel Rico is a Guadalajara-based artist. My name is Julio Cesar Morales. I'm a curator at the Arizona State University Art Museum. I wanted to let you know that we're going to be doing a little Q&A together, a couple of questions, and then we're going to start maybe moving towards a couple of pieces and talk about the creation of the pieces and the influences that led him to do the work. Gabriel and I worked earlier this year together on his first U.S. museum show at ASU Art Museum. Tonight marks the his first gallery exhibition in the United States. So the first question I wanted to ask you, Gabriel, is the title of the exhibition. You talk about the writer and artist William Blake's, and I wanted to ask you what influence of his is within this exhibition.
I already decided to use that title, not precisely because I read a book from Blake. I just found that reference in another book is called The Nature of Creativity. It's like a Stanford University book edited in 1979 by a psychologist. It just talk about the nature of creativity. And I really liked the meaning of that phrase related with my vision like an artist, because for me the one Lao can have many layers to of significance. Mm-hmm. Like for me the legacy for the humanity, the knowledge we generate like species can be a law for the natural world. So that's the reason I decided to use that, and in other ways, I really want to share some points I found in that book. It's talk about the, it's like a test, right? And I want to ask to Julio to read a few, if you can.
Yes. So this is called the Torrance Test of Creative Thinking. There's 17 points. We're just gonna read Gabriel's top three. One is articulateness of storyboard, storytelling, putting the response in the context, giving it an environment. Number 10 is expressiveness of the titles, ability to transform from the figure to the verbal and give expression. And the last one is 15 or 16?
15.
15, which I think really resonates in his work. And that is humor, juxtaposition of two or more integrities.
Yeah, so I mean, that book just gave me a nice reflection of my creativity process. These 70 points just mm-hmm. give me a more idea about the really, how can, like an artist, how is the, I'm concerned about my creativity process. For, of course, the title is just the cherry in the cake. If you can just mash the cake, or you can just be precise if you use the title. The humor is the same. Mm-hmm. So for me, the humor is not is obvious in my work, but not is not the line to define my art pieces. I talk with the humor, but the humor in is not the first impression you receive for my work. I hope, but mm-hmm. is there.
Another interesting fact about Gabriel is actually he's training as an architect. And so that leads us to our next question, and that is, how do you apply your training as an architect into your artworks?
So actually, in this point, I mean, you can really see the geometry are involved in my process, like the geometry shapes, like the squirrel, circle, triangle, the base shapes, figures. In some point, that can be a very obvious. But in other ways, you can just perceive some materials and the techniques. For me, the architect is the architecture is like the combination of many materials to create something the human can use, like bricks, metal, concrete, plastic, all together can create buildings. And I think I can, I use normally that possibility, the possibility of mix many materials to compose a single artwork in this case. But in other ways, you can see the concrete I use in my works or some metals or that, that's it.
And then speaking of that, it's really great to do a studio visit with Gabriel. So maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, I went to visit him in his studio, and it was really amazing to see his archive. Of course, you look at the artwork and there's knives, there's old pesos, there's found material, there's taxidermy, so you can have a really great time visiting Gabriel in his studio. Which leads me to the other, next question, which I was really interested in regards to how he juxtaposes these objects with taxidermy. So this question is, what's your relationship to nature? Or from that matter, animals, did you grow up in a rural setting? Mm-hmm. Or was there a personal experience that led you to considering them as part of your work?
Okay, just let me take me a few minutes mm-hmm. to return to the last question because I need to see
okay.
my shit.
And you have to imagine Gabriel growing up in Jalisco.
Yeah, in Lagos de Moreno.
And, he's 3 years old and something affected him that basically now is coming out in his artwork.
So, just sorry about this, but I wanted to take the second question
you
give me.
Go back, okay.
Yeah. It's, in some point, I really want to share with you a text writer for the poet Percy Bysshe Shelley. It's a 19... in the 15th century, he's an English guy. But you know, the science and the art for me is can be crisscross the line between, and it's a very nice possibility to see the that mm-hmm. that can happen. So this guy just talk about this. Can you help me to?
Yes. So this is Shelley, and this is a quote.
Yeah, this is the.
The sacred tasks of an artist are to absorb the new knowledge of the sciences and assimilate it to human needs, to color it with human passions, to transform it into the blood and bone of human nature. Beautiful quote.
I know. And it's really like you can use the science to receive inspiration. The science is so practical, but mm-hmm. if you switch a little bit,
right.
you can just be involved in the magical world and you can use that practical meaning mm-hmm. in an artistical way. And that's really the normal way I just produce my artwork.
The work, okay.
Sorry about
that. So now we're going to jump back to the following question about animals, the nature, you growing up in a rural setting, or you know, how was these personal experiences reflected in the artwork now?
Of course, I think my past have a hard influence in my practice, mm-hmm. Like an artist. Of course, I remember when I just grown up and I just chill in the hills. I really enjoy to collect stones and branches. I don't know, it's very natural for me. Mm-hmm. And shells in the beach, and you know, depends of the place I was, and
right.
I just collect objects. It's the same practical I normally do in the city. Mm-hmm. So I just have some walks, and one day I can discover a beautiful branch, and another a beautiful Jesus face, and another one a bottle of Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. So it's about the animals.
When was the first time you saw a taxidermy? An animal that had been taxidermy?
The first piece I used taxidermy, actually I showed with Perrotan Gallery 1 year ago in a show entitled Como Te Voy a Olvidar. And it's like a circle made with brass, neon, and a branch with a small fox. It's like it's the first time I show mm-hmm. a piece with taxidermy to the public. But I remember the first time I saw a skin of Fasan, and it's like 10 years ago. So I just be in love for that beautiful feathers. And I just buy that skin, the skin, and the then fur. The fur.
Yeah.
And then that fur just was in my stock for 10 years. And one day I just decided to use it combined with another materials. Mm-hmm. But the magical thing with this kind of animal is like for the brain can be very tricky to define at the first impression. When you create a composition, like more dynamic, it's hard to define in the first few seconds if the animal is still alive or not. So it's like a tricky for the brain. Mm-hmm. For example, the animals, other animals alive, like dogs, when the dogs just come to be close to the right. to dissected animals, they really be obsessed about what if this guy is dead or not. Uh-huh. So for the child's children's can be the same. For the adult can be more easy, but that's my interest. Right. You can create some magical moment using this kind of object.
For us, this is maybe as close as we'll ever get to a bobcat, or you want to.
yeah.
So there's something magical about the repositioning of that within your artwork. Last month, we actually spent some time in Los Angeles. One night we stayed up really late listening to a lot of music. And we're talking about the pop aspects of icons in his work, such as this equation that we'll talk about in a second. But that brings me to the question that we came up with, which is based on a pop band. Of course, you probably know him, but the title of the second album by the band The Smiths is called Meter's Murder. On the title track, Morrissey sings, "The flesh you fancifully fry is not succulent, tasty or kind. It's death for no reason, and death for no reason is murder." In your last exhibition at the Power Station in Dallas, you made this amazing, beautiful, giant piece of steak on the facade of the building that just hung like a necklace. And this is like a four-story building. And was it ribeye or New York slice?
I think it's a ribeye.
Ribeye? Yeah. So the building was wearing this huge ribeye steak. And so I wanted to ask you in regards to your investigation about meat or your obsession with meat, that of course you can see it in various places here. Can you talk a little bit
about that? Of course. I mean, talking about that piece precisely is like I can reflect my education like an architect in that kind of situations. For me, the architecture is a communion between the human and the bricks and the materials. Without one, the other can lose sense. So if the human not can be added, the buildings, it's not sense to have these beautiful buildings we have. So in that point, I just decide to express that idea literally. Just stick a huge piece of steak to the building to reflect like the communion between the meat and the material. I think it's the same in all my work. It's not about architecture, of course, but it's talk about the mundanity of the human, who's are really, I mean, the meat can express equality from the human to the all other animals, can be the same way like the wood represent equality in all the natural world. So it's like that. Right. I like the aesthetic, pop aesthetic, like a cartoon aesthetic, because it's very easy to learn that object. You know, it's for a kid, it's very easy. You don't need to understand too much about art to see that is a piece of steak.
Right. Yeah. And I think the last question before we walk around to look and talk a little bit more about the actual works itself goes back to his interest in the age of reason and historical technologies that has led you to infuse objects with humor, irony, or simply use objects the way they were not intended to be used. Can you help us understand your process from the theory to practice? Can you walk us through the process of one of your works here in the gallery? So perhaps maybe we can talk about this piece.
Yeah,
if you want to talk about the influence of the age of reason in those types of technologies and ideas.
Super. Yeah, I just don't want to be to define all the artwork here. So I just want to be just share with me these art pieces, and if you want to come after this interview, I'm super open. I really want to talk about the most practical pieces here, is that equation there, because it's already is you don't need to move. I mean, I know that piece. So I just want to describe the dynamic to create that piece. I just collect that elements in many different places. Like, for example, I tell you, like, I really like to visit secondhand markets or secondhand stores, and I really want to mix the kitsch culture with some materials more cool, like neon or brass. And I really want to mix very natural materials, like the rocks I found in the Pacific Ocean in Mexico. I found the golf ball in the matrix, actually some matrix, in Arizona, in Phoenix. I create the both brass signs. The first one is not equal, and this is like a devenir. The result of. And the stake, of course, I create the stake, and the neon, of course. But the other materials I just found in many research. Mm-hmm. I like to be involved in my daily life.
Right. So. And so if we wanted to resolve this or think about it, so we start with the meat and the neon, or yeah. Well, do you start with?
No.
Do you think?
You need, I mean, this, pieces don't have a mathematical meaning.
Okay.
You cannot receive a mathematical result clearly. It's just about it's more about to use the possibility of the composition for the equation to create a new piece of art.
Okay.
I decide to start with this series. Actually, this is the nine of the ninth piece for that series.
The ninth question.
Yeah, because in some point I just read about the aesthetic of the beauty aesthetic in the equations. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's kind of difficult to see that beauty in the mathematical equation. So right. I just decide to change the letters and the numbers for objects I really like. Mm. That's the beginning of this series. You can read the equation like a normal equation from the left to the right.
Exactly.
And in a Western type of equation. But actually you can read like an equation, for example, a stake elevate derives for in a fraction. This fraction multiply Coca-Cola for a Jesus and divide it in a, I don't know how can I, it's like a pumpkin, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry?
Gourd.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Multiply with a school of a wild pig or hog. Mm-hmm. And he said, who's at that time divide an avocado and all shoes. Multiply a flower of, it's not ceramic, it's
plastic.
No, actually, no? It's more fine than ceramic, it's porcelain. And then you have the sign is like the integral from a baseball and an orange from glass. It's not equal from a matrix made with from 49 rocks and 49. One ball and two branches. Yeah.
And maybe do you want to talk quickly about this piece that it is slight influence with the Yaqui dance, which is basically one of the oldest Native American tribes in the Americas. And half of the tribe, basically they were kicked out of Mexico after the revolution, and the majority of them ended up in Arizona. And we went to a Yaqui dance that happens once a year, which is the oldest non-Western dance that has, you know, been around. And so do you want to talk a little bit about that experience and maybe some of the pieces within the work?
So basically, These pieces talk about the possibility to decompose an animal in a meaning, like a concept. Sorry. You can see a deer hood in the angle. I just found that object like that. And then I received for a good friend that knife. And that knife, you can see a piece of horn from a deer. So I start to play with that elements. And in some point, it's like a hunting dance. You know, you can kill the deer with the knife. It's like a, it's not juxtaposition, it's more like a, something can impossible, mm-hmm. can be impossible. Let me remember that the okay.
And of course, name. It's like the modernist cube that is
of
formed
course.
As well.
It's like how our knowledge kill the nature mm-hmm. in some way. That's like a, or can be, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and also the question about did modernity really reach third world country like mm-hmm. Mexico and some other spaces as well. Can you also talk about the devalued currency you usually use in your work? Sometimes, or one of the things that you have to look for certain things in Gabriel's work, sometimes they're hidden. For example, sometimes the stand of something underneath, there are these coins from Mexico, pesos that have been devalued. You know, they're from the 70s or 60s. Can you talk about the coins?
Sure. So that coins is normally is come from this the time I was a child in Mexico, like 81, 82, 83, mm-hmm. that years. So I feel directly related with the piece because I use that kind of pieces of my past. Mm-hmm. But in another level, I just want to question the real value of the art pieces with hypothetical mm-hmm. value coins. So you cannot buy nothing, even in Mexico, with that right. coins. And it's like that. It's like the hypothetical value of the coins mixed with the human heritage and the natural world. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about one other piece, or do we want to open it up to?
Yeah, I think it's time to just join with me the show. And if you want to talk about more precise pieces, I'm here. And thank you for coming. And thank you, Peggy,
thank you.
For this show.